As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. I personally use it to guarantee that I'll always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you want to check out a Bitbox O2, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. All one word, no spaces. Check them out. Ah, screw it. Here we go.
What I've seen again and again and again is the scammers will always find an angle. And you could feel that this sort of run-up cycle, the energy is not with the altcoins. They're not, like, they've always been a trailer. Like, when Bitcoin goes up, they trail along with it. But now they're trailing way behind. And a lot of the, like, big ideas that they were selling, a lot of the techno babble, is being seen by more and more people as increasingly irrelevant.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps. Welcome back to High Hash Rate. So today is April 17th. We are now just about 2 days. So this is our final recording before the halving.
Ooh, so, that's right.
So that's coming up. That's exciting. And today we're talking to Dave Bradley, Bitcoin Brains on Twitter. He's the co-founder of Bull Bitcoin. He's organizing the Bitcoin Rodeo conference this summer in Calgary, in Canada. And he's on the board at Bitcoin Well. Dave, how's it going? How's the split?
It's not bad. Yeah, good start. You missed a very important detail. That is that I am widely known as the strongest and best looking Bitcoin entrepreneur in Canada.
Ooh.
That's right. How could I have forgotten that one? Mike was telling me all about that earlier.
It's like, this guy. No, for sure.
I guess I'll start by asking, are you doing anything special for the halving? Are you just go to any halving parties? You got any coming up?
Yeah, so there's a Canada-wide live stream that pretty much all the meetup organizers have gotten together. And we've got a little group of us going out to Banff, which is a little mountain town outside of Calgary. Myself and Ben Perrin, BTC Sessions, and a few other local Bitcoiners. And there's a hotel out there that takes Bitcoin. They give you 20% off if you book in Bitcoin, actually.
Interesting.
So shout out to the Banff High Country Inn. Definitely worth visiting. So yeah, we're like getting together there on Thursday night. And that was kind of like whoever planned the live stream's best guess about when the halving would happen. And it was pretty close, one day off. So we're having a party on Thursday that's like, we're all going to be in there on the live stream. And then, you know, most of us are staying out there in Banff for another halving party the next day when it actually happens. And we're lucky that it doesn't happen at like 4 a.m. or something stupid.
Right. It's interesting, right? So I think I remember the last halving, everybody was dealing with COVID lockdowns. It was right at the beginning of that, life sucked. But has there ever been parties like this? It's a big event this time around, and it doesn't seem like that was necessarily the case in the past and or in the previous halvings.
Yeah, I didn't go to any halving parties. I've been around for all of them, and we had a small gathering. It was illegal at the time, at my place, but we had like 10 people hanging out for the halving last time. My very good friend and co-founder at Bull Bitcoin, Francis Pouliot, got nearly arrested in the park for having a sandwich to celebrate the halving with two other guys, and they showed up with like 15 cops. So,
and then they fight you. That's the stage we were at then, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. It's like, this is the first time, so it's like nobody knows exactly when the halving is going to be. So everybody, all these parties have been organized. Some of them were weeks too early. Some of them, it looks like the European halving party pretty much nailed it. They're going to be doing the 19th and the 20th. But yeah, I just think that's kind of interesting. But you mentioned.
Can I just hop in here for a second?
Yeah.
I'm a little curious, Dave, sort of the background that you're coming from, like where sort of the backstory or maybe a little bit about your expertise in what field.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You've been in the Bitcoin industry for a really long time. So have you been, or you've been in, you bought Bitcoin a long time ago. Have you been in the industry in terms of working in it for as long as you've been holding it?
Yeah, not quite as long, like most people, but I got into Bitcoin in 2010, and I was like mining it in my basement and selling it on local Bitcoins. And so I guess I was technically in the industry at that point, in that I was mining and selling Bitcoin, but sure. I didn't make it like a real business and start working full time in the Bitcoin industry until 2013. And at that point, we opened a physical store selling like Bitcoin and Bitcoin miners and whatever else we get our hands on.
What? So you were selling Bitcoin miners specifically, or were there other products you were selling? Were you selling them for Bitcoin?
We were selling, the main thing that we were doing was selling Bitcoin, like over the counter.
But we also sold a physical store selling Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Kind of like a Forex desk, basically. Okay. And we had different miners. You know, this is right near the end of the days of GPU miners on Bitcoin. So we were building these GPU mining rigs and selling them. And then we were reselling ASICs once those came out. And there were no hardware wallets back then. So there wasn't quite as much stuff to sell. But yeah, we were probably one of the first physical stores like that in the world.
And also, what you just pointed out to me, I have to get this point across, is that, you know, the infrastructure, the technical infrastructure wasn't there at that time in 2010. So you can't just go out on your phone and go to Coinbase. Coinbase isn't even invented yet. Like, you can't just go buy a Bitcoin. So it's so interesting how you have to have this like physical space to be able to sell this digital product, you know. And it's crazy.
Well, it was, there were online exchanges then, but they were kind of shady seeming comparatively, right? And this is the kind of thing where most of the people who were getting into it, like now pretty much everyone has at least heard of Bitcoin, but back then, like if people who were getting into it, they tell their friends about it, they sound crazy, right? And so I think there was a little bit of a hump to get over, where if you could talk to a real person and be like, you know, I'm not crazy. There's other people who think this is useful and something that I should look into, and somebody to have the conversations with too. So I think it really helped back then. And it's interesting that like we've run, you know, through Bitcoin, we've run like over the counter desks like this, and they don't really, like they haven't grown to the same extent the rest of the industry has grown. They're like slightly viable like they were back then, whereas the rest of the industry is like a million times bigger.
Yeah. So, and honestly, this question might just be for me because I've never actually had the opportunity to ask somebody who has found Bitcoin as early as 2010, you know, about their experience. So I'm sure you've shared this extensively, but how did you come across it? And okay, obviously you found it interesting and you started toying around with it, but with this total lack of information and resources, especially compared to today, and the whole industry that's built up around it, what was it about it that at that time sucked you in so much that you just, like you hit the rabbit hole in 2010?
Yeah. So the rabbit hole wasn't nearly as deep back then.
Right, right. You guys were digging it. You guys were digging it.
Well, yeah, it's always deep, brother. It's just like how far are you willing to go, right?
Well, there hadn't really been as much crossover with like the Austrian economics side back then of the discussion. And, you know, a lot of people who were discussing Bitcoin mostly was happening on Reddit and Bitcoin Talk forums. They're looking at it as kind of like a payment tool, you know, like a competitor to MasterCard and an anonymous payment tool that at the time they were saying could not be tracked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty different value proposition than the way that most of us look at Bitcoin now. And, you know, those discussions were happening. Like there were discussions that went in the direction of Austrian economics from Satoshi, even pre-Bitcoin. But really, the whole community didn't start to shift in that direction until, like, you know, 2014-ish, I think. And that was when you started to really get a push to differentiate Bitcoin from all the other altcoins. And it was like, wait a minute, what are we actually doing here? And from there, you know, there was a lot of that discussion happening within the community. And then the Bitcoin Standard came out, was probably the single biggest thing that crystallized that that direction of thought that kind of dominates how most people would sell Bitcoin now.
So have you made that journey as a Bitcoiner? Like when you first came into it, do you think you understood it the way you understand it now? I mean, it takes time, you know, but.
Yeah, no, not at all. I got into it. I was like looking on forums, reading about graphics cards for gaming. And somebody said something like, if you buy this card, you can mine Bitcoin with it. And I was like, what's that? And so I figured out what Bitcoin mining was. And I kind of wrote it off for a little while. Like pretty much everybody, you know, discovers it, writes it off for a while, and then comes back. And it had like a moment in my mind when it hit a dollar where it was like, oh, these are worth more than regular dollars. That could be important. And that was kind of probably the first time that I thought about it as like an important economic force.
Well,
and that was kind of like when I actually started mining it. But I was mostly involved in Bitcoin as like a way to make more fiat, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, I can buy a video card for $300. It'll mine me $500 worth of Bitcoin in the next 3 months and do it again.
At what point did you stop taking a single Bitcoin for granted? I mean, early on, it's a few cents. Who cares? You get more, you'll get hundreds more quickly. At what point was it like, if I lose one, like that is a gut punch?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I used to give everyone one. Like,
that's a good friend.
You know, yeah. And then they're like that. That was kind of like, you know, you send somebody $10, right? Get them started. Do that with Lightning now. Some of those are like friends of mine that still have them. So that's cool. I don't know. I don't know when I stopped taking it for granted. But you have that, you have like a realization every once in a while. You know, I use Bitcoin a fair bit, and most of the time when I'm paying something, it's denominated in dollars. And so the app is just auto-converting. You don't really pay attention. And then sometimes I notice and I'm like, I'm buying something for like $1,000. And I'm like, wow, that is not a lot of Bitcoin at this point.
In the early days, where did you get your information? Were you on Bitcoin Talk, or I guess maybe Reddit was another early one? Were you active, engaging in that discussion? I mean, and if you were, like, about what topics, like, you know, core development, things like that, like how did you interact back?
I was mostly a lurker, but I was thinking about the fact that like there may have been a time when I had consumed every piece of Bitcoin media that existed. Like I had read the whole forums, I had read the whole Reddit, I had read the whole mailing list, and like that was pretty much what there was, you know. So those were pretty much where I got my information. So there was a pretty interesting like move, kind of precipitated by the whole like block size debate. where all of the reasonable people moved off of Reddit and onto Twitter.
So this made me think, like, how do you move on from just being a, you know, this miner guy, you're just realizing you can mine these things, and then you open up a physical Bitcoin store. Like, what's your clientele like? Like, who's coming into this place?
Yeah, so it got to a point where, like, I was selling on local Bitcoins, and I would meet people at this Tim Hortons by my place.
Okay.
And the Tim Hortons for sure thought I was a drug dealer, because I was just, like, showing up and taking cash from people.
Well, you were orange pilling people, right?
Well, no, they were finding me already on local Bitcoins. So that was like the best way to get Bitcoin at that time, and I was the only one in the province, I think, selling Bitcoin. So, at some point, I was like, I should probably make a real business out of this. You know, I was meeting like 5 or 6 people a day, and it was kind of ridiculous. So I was like, okay. And then once we decided, I partnered up with a friend on that, and he had also been mining Bitcoin. And then once we decided, like, you know, we're going to do a store, then we decided, like, what else can we sell in there? Well, the miners were the obvious thing. So,
yeah, something that a lot of people talk about, it's kind of a buzz thing, is like the Bitcoin UX has to improve. It has to get easier. We have to have these more apps, and has to be faster. But even back pre-2000, you know, before seed phrases, before hardware wallets, people figured it out, and there was a lot of value, or there's just a lot of what you're talking about, where you're meeting people, you're doing face-to-face interactions, you're building relationships to buy and trade and just kind of navigate this industry and to buy and sell it. And that's, I think, still really important today. I think that everybody's focus is on this app that is automates everything, but there's so, or maybe just not enough focus on because of the nature of Bitcoin, of the technical difficulty or the technical challenge, the responsibility to, like, secure your own keys and actually do that over a long period of time effectively. You need to have these relationships and these different, this is a different business model, or at least you have to be flexible to that. Is that your experience, like, working in the industry, where this different approach, this less automated approaches?
So there's always a place for that, like, personal connection. We've found with Bitcoin that there's a particular demographic that tends to be a little bit older, wants their handheld through the transaction a little bit more.
Yeah, every company is opening private client services.
Yeah, so those people are coming in greater numbers. And I think that development of, you know, the user experience has actually really opened up Bitcoin to a lot more people. So, like, back then, to your previous question, like, the people that were coming in were, like, almost exclusively men, like 20 to 50, nerdy, you know?
Yeah, first.
And so those are the people who could figure out how to run Core on an air-gapped computer, keep your coins safe. And, you know, all the stuff that was a little bit more technically demanding. Nowadays, the ease of use of, you know, non-custodial wallets and custodial wallets, as well as all the exchanges, has opened it up to a huge group that were the, you know, slightly less technical people of the same age. You know, that the younger people that might not have been able to figure it out before, or might not have wanted to take the time to do it. The next group that I think this sort of super app that you're describing should tackle are those, like, the last mile, you know, the older people who, like, struggled to set up their online banking and, you know, need just a smoother experience.
Right.
And I think that's where the next steps of a lot of Bitcoin companies are aiming, is just, like, a lot more seamless.
Yeah, for sure.
Can I hop in with the question that I started? What were those days like? Early, 2010s, whatever. And you're having all these like dudes, like 35-year-old, coming in, with their in their nerdy way, like telling you guys are all are you guys like all friends having beers? What are you guys doing? What are those days like?
There was a lot of weirdos for sure.
Okay.
A lot of the like straight up, like kind of off the rocker conspiracy theorists, and I'm a pretty big conspiracy theorist, but like I draw the line at flat earth and others of that are that absurd. But you would get people who are literally like wearing tinfoil hats. So like that wanted to like, we had one guy who always wanted to like, he didn't want to do a transaction in the store. He wanted us to come around the building to the alley in case there was CCTV. It's like, well, couldn't there be some in the alley? Like, I don't know, like
an early Gigi or something like this.
Yeah.
And they may not come into your store anymore, so to speak. Right. But like, you can still see those guys. I mean, you just be on Twitter and you'll see two different security experts or cold, hardware wallet people going back and forth. And they're like, if somebody's within 20 feet and they've got this little antenna thing they've added with tin foil to this device, they could steal, hijack, be a man in the middle of tech, like the super very low probability, almost one out of a bazillion chance that anything could act, but these guys are meticulously planning for it. And it's like, they've got their 12 words spread out in 12 different countries.
Well, the cost of a $5 wrench attack has gone up a lot.
Right.
Exactly. But they're still probably like $35.
Right.
Eventually people won't be able to afford wrenches.
They've hardened their digital security, but they should probably be good at jiu-jitsu or carry a gun. All right. We've established that you've been around here for a while. You've consumed so much Bitcoin content that you had to wait for more to be produced. Now you got 10,000 podcasts, new ones a day, showing up on Fountain. But there's also just like, I'm sure if you were reading all these mailing lists and all the forums, there was drama, there was controversy, there was battles over forks. You already mentioned the block wars. So with that, all that behind you that you've experienced, you've gone through it to come out the other side, what is your general opinion of like where we're at now? Because it's heated up more than ever. People are definitely drawing lines in the sand. You're either on one side, you're an ordinals person, you're just an inscripting degen, everything goes on Bitcoin, even the shitcoins. And then you got the total monetary maximalists. I don't know which side you're on, but regardless of that, how is this from your perspective, going through everything, having gone through everything else?
Well, what I've seen again and again and again is the scammers will always find an angle. And you can feel that this sort of run-up cycle, the energy is not with the altcoins. They're not
right,
like
totally.
they've always been a trailer. Like when Bitcoin goes up, they trail along with it, but now they're trailing way behind. And a lot of the like big ideas that they were selling, a lot of the techno babble is being seen by more and more people as increasingly irrelevant. And the reasons that we've been selling Bitcoin to the world are becoming more noticeably true to more people, right? So we've got a world where pretty much everybody knows what inflation is now. 5 years ago, like people probably knew the word, but it was this like nebulous thing that like the government mentions. And they're like, oh, I heard it's a 2%. That sounds great. And then now it's like, we're told it's a 7%, but we're like everybody knows that's not true, right? Everyone can feel it. It's like, it's probably in the 15 or 20% range, realistically, if you've been to the grocery store. And that pain that everyone's feeling is starting to make people aware what the problem is, which is the ever-encroaching grasp and spending of the state and their willingness to print an unlimited amount of money to do that. And once people start becoming aware of that, now they're in a spot where they're primed to hear what the answer is.
You know, that makes me think of a question then, because it seems like you're going off in this way of like, basically, what do you think of fiat? It sounds very fiat with the thing you were describing, and were you able to articulate it before like you do now? And there's lots of questions.
I'll summarize that.
Thank you.
Was your attraction to Bitcoin, was it primarily driven, I think, ideological, like libertarian, Austrian economics? Or was that something that kind of developed later once you kind of realized Bitcoin was kind of having this momentum and trending towards being a potential competing solution?
Yeah. I, like most people, did not realize it at the start. You know, reading the forums and everything like that, Bitcoin seemed like a really cool payment tool. And it seemed like an exciting technology that I could make some money on. And I did. It was a good business to be in early on there. And I didn't view it as this world-changing paradigm shift in the nature of society. And that was something that I only realized over time. And, you know, some of the first places that I started to read about that stuff was through a guy named Mircea Popescu, who was allegedly died swimming in the ocean a couple of years ago, but claimed to be the only Bitcoin millionaire, and the only person with a million Bitcoins. And I have seen some reasonable data that would suggest that could be true. Never met him. No, I talked with him a fair bit on he had like an IRC chat that was like BTC OTC that a lot of the over the counter dealers of Bitcoin were in chatting.
Wow.
Back in the day.
Interesting. And do you think, when you said allegedly, so do you think it's a good possibility that, or at least a big enough possibility that was a very good boating accident?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the, you know, he's got a blog that I think is still up called Trilemma is really interesting and full of lots of crazy shit, but like he makes a good case for his crazy shit. And one of the last things that I remember reading from him was that he said something to the effect of, as the only Bitcoin millionaire in the world, I intend to make sure that every communist in South America is hung. And that leads to the conclusion that maybe the communists in South America might not want him to continue to be alive. Maybe he thought he had a reason to fear the communists of South America. And so the possibility that he either was killed or faked his death seemed to be immediate guesses for a bunch of people.
I imagine you'll probably run into these stories more throughout the years, you know?
Yeah.
My question was, do you think that he was the best troll that Bitcoin, do you think anybody's ever matched his, like, he was a clever, sophisticated, nobody, I don't think anybody's come close. Not that I've come across, right? Like, so.
Because I'm sort of paraphrasing from memory here, but he was claiming to be the DAO hacker that hacked the Ethereum DAO. And I believe, like, presented fairly good evidence, but not conclusive evidence.
Just enough
made
to,
it look like he might have been the DAO hacker, which would be That'd be completely insane if he actually was. I think those are cool stories that, like, he's going to be kind of like a figure of legend, you know?
Right. And I think I brought that up because if anybody goes back and looks up Popescu and kind of reads his old forums, like you said, it's crazy shit. But if you go into it realizing that he was really having fun and that he had a lot of troll incentives like behind what he was doing, it's easier to digest for sure. It's pretty interesting.
So I have another question. It dives a little bit into the background, but your current background, which is, I can see it, a Maddox in your background. And you said that did I hear this right? You're the co-founder of Bull Bitcoin?
Yep.
Wow. Look, can you walk me through what Bull Bitcoin is? Just for a moment, because I'm not Canadian. I'm not familiar. I'm interested.
Well, this is like the fifth guest we've had on that's been associated with or pitched Bull Bitcoin on here.
That's
so
true.
Make sure you pay attention this time.
They always say Bull Bitcoin, but I'm so unclear about, you know, Bull Bitcoin. And I'm the stupid one, so I get to ask these questions.
Did you guys have Francis on here?
Not yet.
No, okay. We would like to. Yeah.
Yeah, so Bull Bitcoin was the idea for Bull Bitcoin came from Francis and I doing a fair bit of business together when we both had brokerages, and we wanted to create a like Canadian Bitcoin super company. And we combined my company, which is called Bitcoin Brains at the time, with the company behind Bills, which was Satoshi Portal, and we came up with a new brand and launched the new brand. And I was with the company for about a year and then eventually left to start a new company making software for Bitcoin ATMs. And then that kind of got me brought into the fold with Bitcoin Well, because I approached Adam O'Brien, the CEO of Bitcoin Well, as a potential customer thinking about this software. And he was like, I want to do that too. And so we ended up partnering up on the software. And then Bitcoin Well later acquired that software company, which is where I got in there, and I was an executive there for a little while, and now I'm on the board.
So it seems like you're just going through these iterations in your life of selling Bitcoin to people.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always been selling Bitcoin. The latest stuff that I'm working on is like adjacent to that, but a little bit different. I'm focusing a little bit more on like the events and media. So like you mentioned, we've got a conference coming up, the Bitcoin Rodeo in Calgary in July, July 2nd and 3rd. We've got JP Sears headlining. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
Of course.
He's an interesting guy that like everybody knows who he is when they see him. That not everyone knows his name.
why do we recognize JP Sears? Like, the moment JP Sears, why do I recognize that this dude? What is he?
Because he's been a viral like comedian
before
videos.
Bitcoin, before his association with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Well, that sounds like a cool event.
Yeah. So he's a pretty great comedian. He's going to be doing a Bitcoin related set.
Oh, nice.
We're doing a roast of BTC sessions.
Wow. That'll be fun.
It's going to be pretty amazing.
Who's the roaster? Who are the roasters?
Well, there's going to be JP Sears.
Okay.
There's going to be myself. We're hoping that Ben's sister will be able to come out. She's a stand-up comedian.
Good.
We've got a guy named Dave Hardman, BTC Hardy on Twitter, who is a longtime friend of Ben's. And one or two other people, C-Funk, and I think, and a guy named Colin Sullivan.
Okay.
Who is, we had a Bitcoin elevator pitch competition last year at the Bitcoin Rodeo, where you basically go and you get like your best 45 second pitch for Bitcoin to a stranger. And we had Ben and Nico judge the results of the best pitch, and the guy who won had a pretty hilarious one. So I was like, well, we should invite him to the roast. So
last night we just recorded a special episode with a bunch of other podcasts, including Canadian Bitcoiner podcast. And it was basically the orange, like giving your orange pill pitch. So we just covered that and you mentioned it. So I'd like to ask you, since this is going to come out around the same time, which is supposed to be for the halving when these episodes come out, but, in 45 seconds, instead of like, not what's your pitch, but what we talked about last night is what should be your goal in 45 seconds, if you, or 20 minutes, whatever it is, it's a single interaction, a limited amount of time. You're not going to change somebody's entire worldview. You're not going to convince them that your definition of what money is the right definition and theirs is wrong. What is your strategy? How do you think about, I got a few minutes, what do I say?
Yeah. So I'll give you my pitch because I don't need 45 seconds, and then I'll tell you why I think it's good. My pitch is this. So Bitcoin is money. It's not an investment. It's not like a stock or a bond. It doesn't confer any rights. It doesn't give you any yield. It's only money. And the point of money is to take the value that you create with your time and store it to use it later. But if you try to do that with dollars, you're going to have a bad time, because while you're storing your value in dollars, the government's printing more. And so your dollars are becoming less rare and therefore less valuable. And Bitcoin's better because the government can't print more. So I think the goal is to you got to get to that point of like them thinking about what is money. Because if they're just thinking about Bitcoin is like, is Bitcoin going to go up more than Tesla next year?
Mm-hmm.
So I can sell it for more dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're not arguing the right argument, and you're not in the right conversation.
Yeah. So you're basically just planting a seed, getting them to start thinking about what is money? How am I looking at this? This is this different thing that can't be changed. So everybody knows in the United States and in Canada as well, that they're printing money, the inflation is coming, or it's here. It's not getting better. The people in charge, nobody thinks that these people are competent. They're idiots. But at least in the United States, it's the world reserve currency. A lot of the negative consequences that come from all the central bank tomfoolery, we're shielded from it. It's less true in Canada. Like your housing inflation, they're raising taxes. Like they're doing all kinds of crazy shit in Canada. It probably lands a little bit easier or a little bit harder when you're talking to somebody in Canada about this stuff. So I guess, yeah, can you confirm that? Like what's going on in Canada? I keep seeing headlines and headlines. I'm like, how is this, how do they keep getting away with it is the meme, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a big turning point with the trucker protests.
Yep.
And there was a feeling amongst a lot of us for a long time, and we were the ones not doing anything also, to be fair, that was like, why haven't the people risen up yet? You know what I mean? Like, I thought this would be too far. And then eventually it was too far. And the trucker protests happened, which were very restrained. They were a very restrained show of anger. A very polite and restrained show of anger. But the people that were affected from that are not going to go back to sleep. Right? So. Right. There's this very large and growing segment especially in Western Canada here where I am, that I would call like the freedom community. And these are people who have identified the problem, this never-ending encroachment of the government.
Right.
So I didn't realize how much that event reverberated even till now. And because the coverage for us is, you know, well, at least for me on my feed, I get like a week of information. It happens all that week, and then I get the new feed, and that's it. But I mean, if it's still going, like it happened, what, 2 years ago, something like this, a year ago, year and a half, and it's still coming at the forefront of people's minds. That's interesting.
So yeah, it goes back to your orange pill story, where you said, I'm getting you thinking about what is money. They're inflating. Bitcoin can't be inflated. And then it's what's the meme? It's like, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And we talked about this before on the podcast, that part of this process is people, all the problems that we call problems from the fiat system, we know it as a problem with the fiat system. These people know these problems exist too. They just don't necessarily have this packaged term that encapsulates all this fuckery, and it's just fiat. But once you put that in front of them and you're like, all these problems you're talking about, that's fiat. The opposite of that is Bitcoin. And once they see it, they can't unsee it. So once you put that seed, when you're orange pilling somebody, they can't unsee it. If it takes them a week or it takes them 10 years to figure out what you planted, everybody's different. But the same in Canada. I think people see something like, although the trucker thing did have like some immediate positive effects and they did get some concessions, not all of these types of incidents along the way, these protests, these changes, they don't lead to like revolution in a week. But after that trucker movement, like you said, boom, a phase shift. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. And now the ball gets rolling towards a new direction.
Yeah. And I think these people are ready to hear about Bitcoin. And so we're doing a lot at the Bitcoin Rodeo this year, kind of talking about how Bitcoin actually affects the world. Like it's a very non-technical conference. We're not aiming to really be just like beating the drum on the story of hard money either, which a lot of conferences are doing a great job of already. I think we're sort of starting to talk about where the effects of fiat or the counter effects of Bitcoin creep into the world. So, you know, we've got a panel about how fiat ruins culture and art. And, we're going to be looking at a lot of ideas like that in terms of, like, how is this actually relevant to people, and how can we point out that so many of these problems that we can identify in the world are solvable by eliminating fiat.
Yeah, the optimistic side of me when it comes to long term and it, taking into consideration what's going on in the current Bitcoin space is that because like things like ordinals are just, they're fiat. You're trading in Bitcoin, you're inscribing something in Bitcoin, but at the end of the day, all of this is to acquire more fiat. But what it's also kind of revealing, because, you know, NFTs, if you want to consider them art, which a lot of people will, this is an example of how fiat destroys art and destroys culture. It creates the scammers, the degenerates, even in something as such as art or creativity, self-expression, fiat finds a way to ruin it, even when it's on the Bitcoin network. So like fiat is it's got its tentacles and it's perverting the culture by twisting the way people view the protocol. And it's,
yeah.
So a lot of fiat, people will hopefully realize this.
Yeah. Fiat rejects the idea that there is an objective quality of beauty. And you see that in things like the NFTs, where it's like people will call them art, but they're like, they're almost like deliberately terrible art. And we know that when we look at that, that that's not beautiful. And maybe it's ironic that it's not beautiful and still valuable. And that's the point. But it's not real art. And that's where its twisting effects creeps into the commercial side.
Absolutely.
Makes it more viable to be an NFT scammer than an actual artist.
Something that you made me think about back there, Dan, when you said fiat ruins everything and just whatever it touches, it ruins. And that goes down to like what I realize is that like it goes down to the math layer of it, of what it is. It's like, it's an equation that doesn't make sense.
Well, it's like, people talk about that. People don't want to die. People are afraid to die, but eternity, if you never die, there's no scarcity of time, then there's no value in any individual minute. There's no value to the time that you're spending. So if there's no limit, there's no scarcity in fiat, then there's no value. You're just constantly watering down the value until people realize there's no end to dollars. There's no end to bailouts. There's no end. There's no scarcity of rescues. So what incentive do you have to take anything, to care about anything? You take everything for granted, and you just want to make the money faster than the chump next to you, because you're just trying to outcompete him. Any scam will work as long as it works.
Yeah, every incentive system in the world is twisted.
Right, exactly. So, when it comes to the Bitcoin Rodeo, is like, it's a rodeo, it's a conference, it's speakers, it's panels. Is it outside? It's in this. What's going on?
It's like Cowboys, yeah. Rodeo, like this kind of thing.
BT Sessions going to ride the bull, a real bull?
So it's not an actual physical rodeo. We called it the rodeo because, immediately following the conference, it's on July 2nd and 3rd. On July 4th is the first day of the Calgary Stampede, which is like the biggest rodeo in the world. And we get about 2 million people to the Stampede every year. So it's like a giant, the whole city turns into a huge party. So a lot of people come to town for that. And so we plan it. And it is, there will be a number of cowboy hats at the Bitcoin Rodeo.
Hell yeah.
Well, then it's a perfect, I mean, the name is perfect itself.
Yeah.
I've never been to Calgary, but I know it's really fucking cold, or it gets really fucking cold in Calgary.
It does not get really fucking cold in Calgary in July.
No, but you know, but my, no, it doesn't. But my, it's beautiful in July, I'm sure. But my point is, I live in a very cold Midwest climate. And like when you come out of winter, you get to spring and summer. If you don't live in a place where you have a really cold, brutal winter, you just don't appreciate how great that feels when you get to the spring and summer. Go ahead.
We have a bit of a weird climate in Calgary. We have this wind phenomenon called a Chinook, where we get random periods in the middle of the winter where a bunch of warm air from the coast comes in and just like hits Calgary directly.
Huh.
And it'll just be like plus 10 for a week in the middle of February, and all the snow will melt. And so we get breaks, at least. And we have a really like, it's like a completely dry cold. So I find it easier to deal with than some places like Toronto or Vancouver, where you have like, even though it's not technically as cold, it's like a wet cold. And it like gets inside all your clothes and just like, it's impossible to get away from. With ours, you just like wear warm clothes and you're good.
Nice.
It's like a Colorado in that way.
Right. And so like the analogy of, you know, Bitcoin winter, bull markets, Bitcoin summer, whatever you want to call it. You've been through a bunch of these. No cycle's the same. There's no guarantees. Nobody can make a prediction on where the price is going. That's bullshit stuff. But bull markets are really fun. And I have a feeling by the time it's your third, fourth, fifth bull market, you start to get like a gut feeling or instincts about where things are going, what things are looking like. How do you feel about this one? This is your what, fifth cycle? How are you feeling about this one? Are you over that, or do you still get excited?
I'm not emotional about it anymore. And it's funny because I'll like walk in to see a friend somewhere who've been a Bitcoiner for 5-8 years kind of thing, and they're like, oh my god, did you see what happened to the price today? And I'm like, I don't really like follow the price on a day-to-day basis anymore, because I'm like, I feel like I've sold enough Bitcoins. You know, my Bitcoins are now for my heirs, and I'm hoping to have more than I do now.
Lather,
can I pop in here with a weird question, or do you have?
Before you off track it, I just wanted to ask. A lot of people are like, Jesus Christ, another Bitcoin podcast, another conference, another blog post, another tweet thread, another spaces. And they get maybe a little jaded and they're like, there's no good new. I'm not learning anything interesting or inspired by anything new in this space. For somebody who's been around even longer and has consumed it all, where do you go to find new inspiration or to find a new interesting take or angle on Bitcoin that actually gets you thinking and inspires you in some way?
Well, we're trying to do something that is basically just fucking cool.
It ain't.
Like, it's going to be a really good time, and we're hoping to make as many of the topics like approachable to somebody who doesn't really know Bitcoin, but still interesting to somebody who's like neck deep in the space.
That's what I think. I see a trend in that where it's, you don't have to talk about Bitcoin specifically in every conversation. You can start to really branch out. Because like I said earlier, there's a lot of things that are fiat. You can identify them as fiat, but there's a lot of things that are in alignment with like a Bitcoin ethos or a Bitcoin philosophy or values, right? And you can share those values a lot more broadly. And it sounds like Bitcoin Rodeo is an example of that.
Yeah, we're trying to make it memorable, I guess.
Cool.
Well, and we've got a pretty big focus on the comedy stuff.
Well, that's great.
Nice.
Will there be Maddox's there, like display?
There will be.
Oh, very nice. Can I ask this out there question? All right, here we go. Made me think of it last night, and it just popped up to my head. What do you think of stoicism, or the concept of stoicism?
No, too high for this shit.
Fair enough.
I'm too high for this shit.
It's that kind of show, guys. Come on, I gotta ask these questions, right?
For sure. But Dave, really appreciate you coming on and talking to us tonight. You're dabbling in so many things. What is there anything we missed? Where can people find more, or where do you want to send them if they're interested in more Calgary or anything else, or Rodeo? Excuse me.
Yeah, when did you say this show's coming out?
We're pushing out some shows very fast right now, but I think there's about two more in front of this one.
So about so two, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. So post have it.
Thank you.
Yes.
I should have just done that math.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
By that time in the future, there will be a coupon code that your listeners can use to get $69 off.
Nice.
Well, that's nice. So perhaps we should push this forward so people can, you know, activate that sooner. You know?
Yeah. Well, what's the coupon code? Do you already know what that is?
I don't.
Okay.
Know what it is yet. We could say high hash rate.
Perfect. High hash rate. $69 off. That's a meme. All right. Yeah, like I said, thanks for coming on.
Are you on X or anything? Are you on what's working?
Bitcoin Brains.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You want people to find you?
Yeah, okay. So
if you mentioned it already.
You can find me on Twitter as Bitcoin Brains. I'm on most things as Bitcoin Brains. And you can also find a lot of really important information on my website, bitcoinbrains.com, including the story of how I became the strongest and best looking Bitcoin entrepreneur in Canada, as well as the time that I received an endorsement of that claim from the now premier of Alberta, Daniel Smith. So
that sounds
fantastic. I'd recommend people visit the website. There's also a section about some steaks that I've eaten.
Those are good looking steaks. I'm on the website right now.
Do you update with more steaks?
You know what? It's due for an update because I have more pictures.
Is this kind of like the MySpace, your top eight friends? Do you like movies around? This is the top eight steaks, or there's more than that on there? But
no, this is just scratching the surface. These are mostly like chosen for their variety because the fact is the vast majority of the steaks that I eat are those Brett Lake Wagyu ribeyes that you can see in some of those pictures. And those are just vastly superior to all the other steaks on there, but they all look the same.
Can I just please hop in here with this? So are you prepping these steaks, or I have to look at these photos?
You do. Yeah. I also have a thread. If you search steak from Bitcoin Brains on Twitter, you will find a thread that I wrote that details how to cook a great fucking steak. It's important reading.
So you're definitely cooking a lot of barbecuing up in a lot of steaks.
You'll see the method.
Excellent skill.
I guess my last question then is, when people come to Canada or Calgary in particular, where do they go for the best steak if they want to get one at a restaurant or pick one up at a butcher?
They go to Bitcoin Brains.
Well, if he's not in town.
Yeah.
So there is a steakhouse downtown Calgary called Vintage. Vintage has some pretty good Australian Wagyu and sometimes randomly has really good Canadian Wagyu, but that's kind of like off the menu. You have to ask to see the off the menu steaks. There's another steakhouse called Caesar's, which is like a really old steakhouse where the drink, the Caesar, was invented. And it has the gold grade of the Brant Lake Wagyu, which is the one that I usually eat, but I have not had it there yet. But it should be very good because they're usually very good at preparing their steaks.
You just gave...
So,
I don't know if this has occurred to you or you're probably involved in this, but it just gave me an idea of like a Bitcoin steakhouse. I wonder what a Bitcoin steakhouse would look like, you know?
Well, if you want to go down the steak rabbit hole, go to bitcoinbrains.com. I think that's a good launch point.
Cool, guys. I'll cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!